mean, you've been putting in work for so long.
Putting a lot of work.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to Putting in Work, episode 123 of the interview podcast on the 8-Bit Collective. I'm your host, John O'Peck. We are powered by Audio Technica, and this week we have a very audio-centric episode. We're talking to Nathan Plumridge, singer-songwriter. He's just released his first EP. It's called Sustainer, but Nate's been playing music for literally his entire life, it feels like. I've known him since he was maybe 15 or 16. He was playing guitar in church and really blew me away from an early age with how great he was, how naturally gifted he is in a creative sense. And he's been playing, touring with bands since he was like 17. And now to finally put out something that's his own, he's gone to Nashville to record and produce this EP. It's a pretty special thing. So I thought it'd be great to get Nathan on the show to talk about that experience, how it's all come together, but also some of the kind of emotional stories behind what's inspired this EP and why it's coming out now. I always find it interesting to talk to a musician about the creative process, and when someone has been so involved in a release in every aspect, you know, sometimes you might talk to a drummer, but they can only really talk about the drum parts, or you talk to the guitarist and they haven't been involved in the mixing. But Nathan really has been very hands-on with this, working closely with a producer over in Nashville. So I thought it was a really good insight into what it takes to kind of from start to finish release a bunch of songs that have been produced to be played on the radio and have that real polished feel. So if you want to listen to Nathan before you listen to the podcast, you can check him out on Bandcamp and Spotify, iTunes. It's Nathan Plumridge and the EP is called Sustainer. But for now, here he is. Enjoy the show. Nate, thanks for joining me, coming into the studio. It's good to have you here.
Absolute pleasure, mate.
It's been a while.
It's been a long time. Yeah. We're saying about a year since we've probably seen each other.
Yeah, and before that, it could have been like 5 or 6 years, I think.
Yep, yep.
So, yeah, we've got a lot to catch up on. But we kind of go way back to when you were probably like 15, 16, playing guitar in church.
Yep.
Like 2006 to 2008 when I was running in those circles. So
yeah, totally.
It's good to see you here and good to see what you've been up to, because I kind of been following the whole Plumridge family from afar. You've all had your own little projects working on. You're all busy boys.
What's
so
going on?
Who's the busiest? I don't know.
The busiest? Oh, man. We're all all competing in that.
Yeah.
Yeah. All different fields, I guess. Yeah. Like, I'm obviously the more music. Both those boys, Caleb and Jake, they're into all things film.
Yeah.
But Jake sort of does more the anything from adventure stuff to... So he's done like Africa, filming the wildebeest over there. He's at the moment doing... Rostered On, a series for Netflix and stuff, whereas Caleb does a lot more marketing, sort of in the professional world, business kind of stuff. So,
pretty
so
cool.
It's good variety between us all.
Yep. Yeah. Good when you can kind of come together and work together in some way. I think that you've probably done a bit of that on this EP.
Totally, yeah. Yep, yep. So Caleb features on piano. He's also a muso.
Mm.
And... we can talk about that story later, but also sort of co-wrote a song as well. And then Jake did all photography for the artwork. And so a bit of a team effort
cool.
for sure.
Yeah. You must have some proud parents. Look at our boys. Yeah. So for, I guess, the backstory, the origin story of Nathan Plumridge, the musician, how long have you been playing music? Because like I mentioned before, I met you when you were probably 15 or 16 and already you were fairly accomplished from my perspective. You were playing guitar on stage in church, you were showing some leadership from that age, and I remember hearing that you had like a perfect ear or something, like perfect pitch.
Wow. I actually don't try to tell too many people that, but perfect pitch is actually a thing.
Superpower?
What's that, superpower?
Yeah.
Oh, totally. So to answer your first question, I first picked up a guitar at 7 years old, and I got lessons straight away from Rod Gear, actually, and Matt Jacoby, so two musicians from the band Sons of Korah, and they just taught me two very different styles than I probably, you know, naturally you sort of pick up the rock and roll stuff. But I learned a lot of Spanish and classical kind of stuff from Rod, and then Matt was the first electric, you know, he put his electric in my hands, and I was like, wow, this is cool, so we did some rock and roll stuff, and it was really good to sort of set that base as a musician. And shortly after, I kind of discovered this, wait, I'm listening to the radio and I know what key that song's in. And I could just play it straight away. And then that's kind of gone with me ever since. And we used to do these tests at school as a joke, like someone would sit on the piano and I'd have to close my eyes and they'd hit a note. And I would pick these notes probably 8 times out of 10. And I haven't done a test like that lately, but it's like a superpower, but it's also really annoying because you're listening to the radio, you're like, oh yeah, that's in D, and you're kind of playing along, D, B minor, G, whatever. It's like, what? It's just the weirdest thing.
You don't even want to.
Yeah.
That's funny. I find that when I pick up a guitar, I can kind of get pretty close to the key fairly quickly, but like the chord changes and stuff, it's definitely not at that level. So you've got something going there. That must be useful. Like, it must have some practical application.
Mega useful. Yeah. In all sorts of weird ways. Yeah. Like, it's even annoying. Like, you hear like a hum or a buzz or some dog barking, and you're like, man, that's annoying, that F sharp. It's just like, whatever. It's like, why aren't you barking in G?
That's funny. What's the typical doorbell?
Doorbell? Oh, hell.
It's like, it's two notes.
Two notes, true. Unless you got one of those like full melody doorbells, and it's real headspin.
Is it like a fifth and an octave? No, I don't know.
Yeah, all the octaves and yeah.
Anyway, yeah, I'm sure that's come in handy when you're writing music, but we can get into that process a bit later. So you're doing the guitar lessons, and when did you actually get to the point where you were able to kind of play in a band or perform, whether it was church, home, or school, whatever it might be?
Yeah, school was pretty early on. Like, I was just always on a guitar for some sort of assembly or whatever by the time I could string together three chords. And then church, I was like playing every week since I was 10 years old, and pretty much right up till now, 28, is most weekends at church. And that was probably the greatest training ground. Just to be constantly playing and with different musos and that kind of thing. And they kind of all developed from there. So
yeah, it's interesting you think about, like, you often watch Australian Idol or X Factor, whatever, these shows, and you get the pretty high ratio of people who started singing in church, like Beyonce started singing in church, all these people. And it is really, like you mentioned, a good training ground. And I remember talking to my friend Ilya, who used to play drums with me, and he's playing in bands now, like even years and years later, talking about other musicians he plays with being nervous at gigs. And he's just like, I've been doing this since I was 12, like every Sunday. And you don't think about, it's not a performance at church, it's just playing music. And, you know, even when you're a kid and maybe you're not keeping time right, or you play a wrong chord, like, it's a pretty forgiving audience as well.
Absolutely, yeah. But it gives you that chance to kind of really hone your craft, and week in, week out, different people. It's really quite a unique place to be learning, so yeah.
And it kind of teaches you, I think, as well, like, you're working with different musicians every week, it's not the same people. You have to adjust to different people's styles, whether it's the person that's leading the music that week. So all good skills to have, I reckon.
Yeah. And you pretty quickly learn how to sort of leave space or fill space where you need to. And there's kind of other dynamics other than just playing the four chords that you need to play. It's so much more than that. So
Like reading the room and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So from as far as playing in church and that kind of thing, when did it become something for you that you were working on outside of the Sundays, like as far as writing music and performing and that kind of thing?
It was never a chore for me in terms of playing guitar or learning. Like, Mum and Dad would always say, they'd almost have to rip me off the guitar to stop practicing through the week. So it was always something I was doing and loving. But particularly in those kind of teenage years, 14, 15 upwards, I started to really put pen to paper, and I was playing a lot, you know, whether it was school, church events, whatever, playing heaps. But then, sort of in that 15 to 17, you know, I started singing, and then that kind of opened up the whole songwriting thing, and the singing sort of progressed from there too. So, probably teenage years is where it all kicked off.
And what was the kind of mindset? Because I know, like, me and every other teenage kid with a guitar is like, I want to, you know, play in the next Fall Out Boy or whatever it is at the time. Like, you want to be a rock star. But was that something that was on your mind at that point, or were you all about, like, you've just put out a worship album? Was that were you that focused from that early?
Yeah, I mean, I always had certain inspirations. I remember going to a church conference when I was like 14. There's a guy, Henry Seeley, who's like my absolute hero, and that kind of really, I just watched him playing and singing, and I just, like, man, I was so inspired, and that really, like, lit this fire in me. I was like, man, I've got to do that. And then sort of doors just opened really organically. Like, when I was 15, it was pretty amazing. Justin Michael, the lead singer of the band that I soon was to join,
Compliments of Gus. We'll give him a plug there.
Compliments of Gus. That's right. That's another story altogether. But when I was 15, he just released his own solo album and said, I'm going to Queensland for a weekend. I want you to come as my guitarist. And I'm 15 years old. I'm like, what the heck? So I went up for this weekend and we played at a couple of events up there, and then I went to Dreamworld and whatever, and then back to school, and then Monday I'm like, what just happened? And that was real catalyst for many more of those weekends to come.
I forgot that you were part of that group for a while, but I remember watching you guys play like a festival in Mildura when I was working there. What was it like playing with these guys who've been like literally touring and recording albums for like probably a decade or more at that point?
Nuts. Like, these guys are 10 plus years older than me each. So it was when I was 17, I got this call up from Jared, the keyboard player, and he was like, hey man, my wife Beck, the bass player, just falling off a trampoline, jumping with the kids, broken the arm. We've got a gig. It's like 1,600 people in Brisbane in a couple of weeks supporting a band called Casting Crowns. Do you want to come play bass? And I was like, excuse me. It's like, yes, I'll do that. So it kicked off from there, and Beck started having, they had another couple of kids after that, and just kind of wound down the bass playing. So I ended up being the bass player of this established band, and I was just like, what the heck, doing these weekends away and meeting a heap of people, you know, all over the country. It was really quite amazing. And then we got another bass player on board, and I ended up going on to a second guitar, and 7 years later I was still part of that band.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, that was, and again, another thing that just stumbled across my path. It was just amazing.
So from that early kind of inspiration to, you know, do what you saw Henry Seeley doing at that conference, is that what's kind of focused you on in the worship path? Is that what you'd say? Or was there points where you're like, you know, what kind of career musician could I be? Could I be a touring artist? Could I be a sessions musician? Like, what were the different options, and how did you kind of pick the way to go?
Good question. This particular project is definitely a worship project, but I would say I'm definitely not pigeonholed to that. So I'm really passionate about the songwriting and stuff too. And as an artist, I'm still figuring out what that looks like for me, whether I do the artist thing, or is that just part of the profile, you would say. Like, I know a lot of people, they'll write for other people, which I'm also working on, but then doing the artist thing, then church thing, and I think it's a bit of everything. But this particular project, I wanted it to be quite more in your face worship album.
Cool. And I guess it's like, some people would think like, oh, you have to like manage your brand and like make sure that everything you do is working towards whatever your vision is. Do you think that way, or do you think like you just want to do whatever you feel like doing?
Pretty much that thought definitely comes across my mind, going, oh, you know, like you've got this brand and this image, and people think of this and that, man. But I'm like, if I'm still figuring it out, then how am I supposed to know exactly what that looks like? I mean, I don't have any manager. Like, I'm an independent artist, and I'm starting to build a team around me. But until I'm being told what I have to do, I'm just going to do what I want to do. And there's not a lot of money in it, so I'm not sort of answerable to anyone.
So this EP, is this your first kind of release that's all you, essentially?
Yeah, first proper legit like CD album kind of thing. Like, done a bunch of done a bunch of solo songs in the past, some on Spotify and all that, but this was like the first project of like a collection of songs. Went over to Nashville last year, and that's probably jumping ahead in the story a bit there, but that's how this all this kicked off, this project.
So why now? Like what kept you from doing this like multiple times before now? Was it just that this was when the songs and the inspiration hit you as something you wanted to release as like a collection of music?
Yeah, I'd been writing on and off and not taking it super seriously. I just kind of writing when I felt like it. And the past few years, I went to Nashville. Firstly, that hero I talked of, Henry Seeley, had actually started a church over in Nashville. Moved from Melbourne over to there, and I went over the first year because I was running a conference, and I thought, oh, I'll just go check out what's going on. It happened to work out in my holidays from work, and it just blew me away. Like, that place is crazy when it comes to music. It's just like alive. So much going on.
It's got a reputation for sure.
I mean, you're talking like every genre, people pigeonhole it as like country or Christian, but man, it's all happening there. And So that kind of blew me away and just really inspired me and opened my eyes to, wow, there's a lot going on. And so I went back. So it's been 3 consecutive years. I think this will be my 4th coming up in September. Just a month at a time. And I just gradually building networks of friendships over there and songwriting circles and stuff. And I particularly hit it off with this one producer about my age. And he's up and coming, just trying to push full time into it. And I just hit him up and I said, mate, I'm thinking of coming back next year. I want to, I want you to produce my stuff because we'd written some stuff before and it worked great. I was like, I think we've got a good partnership here. You know, if we actually lock in some time, I'm thinking 5 or 6 songs. What do you reckon? And he emailed straight back saying, I can't believe it. I was just been thinking this week. I really want to push full time into this, but I need some openings. And it was just like, well, here we go. Let's do it. And so last year, June, July, I went over, we spent 3 weeks just flat out recording and finishing writing. So we'd written a bunch of email and ideas, both of us contributing, and then just went hard for 3 weeks and barely had a voice by the end of that. And then, we sort of had these 6 songs and by the end of that, so it was
cool.
It was pretty cool.
Yeah. I had a bit of a listen on Bandcamp today, and it's not like you just sat down with an acoustic guitar and bashed out like some, you know, some folky ballads or whatever. Like it's there's a lot of like instrumentation and composition going on there. So is that something that you've just plucked out of your own brain, sitting at whether it's a keyboard or whatever it is to put this together, or is that something the producer's got a big hand in as well?
Yeah, big hand from the producer. That's particularly why I worked with this guy, Tyler, because he's got a great pop sensibility, whereas my background's more rock. I'd happily just pick up an electric or an acoustic and just...
shred.
Just bash out a song, you know. But I really wanted this to be... I mean, you can test this for yourself if you're listening, but I wanted this album to sound like a rock band with a pop edge kind of thing. So kind of like your One Republic in that kind of zone. And... So I hit this guy up because I know he's got this amazing pop sensibility, just in sounds and beats and things like that. So, and just like hooky melodies. And I was like, if we're going to send stuff to radio, it's got to be stuff that radio are going to play. And so, that's kind of why I particularly worked with him. So.
Yeah. And is that like difficult as a musician that's written probably a lot in the past and, you know, you probably think you don't need help, but you've gone to someone and kind of given them part of the, you know, you've handed the reins to them in a sense along the way.
Yeah, and it's like a new friend as well. You know, you're sharing these songs, and you're opening them up to other ideas, and it's kind of a little bit exposing. You're like, man, that's not how I would have thought, but yet it's like that whole. You sharpen each other and I'll have this idea and he's like, oh, never would have thought of that. And then vice versa. And in the end, you really can come up with some really cool stuff. There's points where we're just like laughing in the studio, like, what? How did we come up with that? We never would have thought of that. But our powers combined, you know, that kind of thing. And yeah, so if you, as a writer, if you can be vulnerable enough and willing enough to kind of put on the plate and be like, all right, we're sharing this, we're working together, you can come out with some real gold. Yeah.
That's cool. And that kind of extended to Caleb as well. Like I saw that video you guys threw up about kind of him helping you out on a song. And like the story behind that I thought was quite powerful. So it might be worth just sharing it. But is there like we can talk about that song as well. But is there a theme for the whole EP you find that runs through it? And is it connected to that song in particular?
Yeah. Yeah. So that song is called Sustainer, which is the title track of the EP. And that was one of the earlier songs. Yeah, so one of the first songs. And straight away, as soon as it was written, I knew that was going to be the title track of the EP. Like, it summed it up. Long, long story short, my brother, who is 30 years old, Caleb, the producer, video guy who happens to play piano, he was married about a year and a half ago. And his wife, Elise, got breast cancer and just passed away last June, July, around the same time that we, you know, did all these songs. And crazy, traumatic time, really, really difficult. But at the time I was working on this song, you know, as an artist, you feel a bit helpless, but you can just sit at the piano or sit at the guitar, and sometimes just singing is a therapeutic way to go about it. And So I had this, it was from a Bible verse, you know, a song of faith and that God would sustain us, basically. And so I was kind of just jamming this on the piano and it was kind of helping me through it all. And then one day I went to my brother's house and he was caring for Elise at the time, full-time caring for her. She couldn't leave the house and trying to be a boss and a full-time worker as well. And I remember she was so unwell that we couldn't actually go upstairs to where she was on the couch to see her because she just couldn't handle seeing people at the time. So Caleb came down to see us and he's got a little piano room downstairs there and he kind of sat at the piano stool and I was like, oh man, while we're sitting down here, why don't you just jump on and start playing? Here's a bit of a song I was working on. And long story short, about 3 minutes of playing and his piano part really set the pace for what this song would be. It's kind of almost like a hymn-like sounding song. And so that's kind of what birthed that song. And it's pretty special that once we'd finished all these recordings, including Sustainer in Nashville, got it back and we're mixing it in a studio in Melbourne. And it was just kind of like it was missing a little bit of the icing on the cake, that song. And it was that it needed some real piano. And so they happen to have a grand piano in the studio. So I got Caleb straight up to Melbourne and the piano that's on that song is my brother playing. And yeah, so it's really meaningful, special song. Yeah. I think
that's awesome, and I'm sure it means a lot to Caleb to be able to be part of that, because you know, he's always been a musician and someone that's probably dreamed of recording and that kind of thing, so to be part of that with you would be pretty special too.
Yeah, it was really cool. Yeah, and he's a great muso too. Yeah. So it's his feedback and advice and having him part of the whole project was pretty cool.
Hmm.
And he's actually playing on all the live gigs that we're doing the place as well, which is pretty cool. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
So what's been the response, like getting to the point of releasing that EP? You must have been feeling, you know, the anticipation, the nerves, the how's it going to be received, I'm guessing?
Yeah, definitely. Especially because radio...
It's a personal thing too.
Yeah, yeah. And radio was in the mind. Radio was in my mind from the start of like, I want these songs to be heard. Because a lot of the stuff I'd done in the past was just kind of in the bedroom studio, whack it up. If it gets 10 plays, cool, that's fine. But this, I was like, no, I'm investing in this project, so I want it to spread. Which is, it's kind of a weird thing, that whole idea of promoting your own art is because you're putting it out there for people to judge, you know. But it's been received really well. The first single, particularly called Freedom, did quite well on radio across Australia, which is great, and was in the top 30 in the Christian charts for about 8 weeks, I think. Got up to about number 20 or something, which is a first for me. I was like, wow, this is cool, you know. As a solo artist, it was like, oh, wow. And the other songs are doing really well as well. So it's cool to hear stories of people like, man, I was, you know, a lady in America, it was a friend of a friend or something, was going through a hard time and listened to one of the songs and it really helped them. And I was like, man, it helps to make it all worthwhile when you hear some real stories. And
It's probably a funny thing because, like, everything about, I guess, playing in church is it's not about you. And then it's kind of like you want this to get heard. So it becomes a bit more of the promotional machine and kind of pumping yourself up. And it's probably hard to switch that on. And it's probably just not natural for you to do that, right?
Yeah. Oh, man. I was just talking to a friend today about this. To be honest, I actually hate the whole social media thing and this whole idea of we've got to promote ourselves and try and get the most hits and likes and we're boosting posts and all this. I'm like, this is just the worst, but it's what has to be done. If you want people to hear your song, you've got to get it in front of their face, basically. You've got to get it out there. And it's just part of it's the nature of the beast, unfortunately. got to kind of do that promotion thing. And I like to be someone that sort of isn't always up front. So I liked sort of playing in compliments to Gus, just being that guitarist, and to now be the guy, the name, you know, the front cover of the album is, I don't know. I don't love it, to be honest. It's, it sort of almost comes at a cost, you would say.
It's almost like, a different weird kind of humility where you have to actually boast. It's like the opposite of what being humble usually means, but it's humility in the sense that like it's natural for you to do this one thing, but you have to do something different from that. And I had the same experience when I wrote my book. It was like, it's so not me to ask anyone to spend money on anything. Like, you know,
it's weird, isn't it? You just want to give them all away.
Yeah, like, but then it's like, well, you put all this work into it and it's only going to really happen if people support it. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost like you humble yourself to say, I need your support to make it happen.
Yep.
So
definitely.
It's a weird kind of humility where it's like pumping yourself up, but also putting yourself at the mercy of the market and the audience. So, yeah.
100%.
Weird thing. Weird dichotomy there.
It really is. Yeah. Yeah. But so that's the way it has to roll.
Yeah. And I'm sure it'll get more natural to you. You've got some good mentors there with Justin and other people who've probably been there before.
That's it. Yeah. You start to build a team around you, which helps a lot. Sort of you can spread the load. Just a lot behind the scenes when it comes to organizing things. And it's just so much. Like, I've learned a lot in this project to go a year ago, what's happened in a year to get 6 songs onto a disc is so much work. But the more people you've got around you, the better the process. Yeah.
That's awesome. So does this give you ideas for what you'd like to do next? Or are you still at the point of like just focusing on this one and kind of seeing how it goes and where it takes you?
Yeah. It's kind of in the back of my mind going, okay, so this is done. Then what? Once this is kind of all out. And so I honestly don't know yet. Going back to Nashville in September. So I'm spending, about 2-3 weeks just flat out trying to write as many songs with as many people as I can. Whether they're for me or not, I'm not sure yet. So it's a bit of an unknown what's next. I think if I do another project, it probably won't be so much in the pocket of the worship stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, it might be a bit more storytelling. Obviously, faith is a very important thing to me, so that would always be a part of my songs. But I think maybe not in that worship sense as such. So, which is probably more my natural fit, is to kind of have a bit more storytelling side of it as well. So, yeah, I'd like to push into that a bit more. Yeah, that's cool.
That kind of unleashes the creativity a bit more probably and allows you to reach more people as well.
Yep.
But, yeah.
Yeah, it sort of opens up what you can do, you know. That, yep. Yeah.
Very cool. So what would you say has been the hardest point of getting to where you're at now, getting this out and
In this particular project? Yeah. Or
just, I guess, even like the whole journey, like building up the confidence to go out and put something with your name on it and be confident that people will embrace it.
Yep. Probably a tricky part of the process was working with this producer in Nashville, like, great writer, great producer. And I'd said to him, here's a challenge doing a mix the project as well. So actually mix all the tracks over there. He was like, yeah, cool. I've never done this before, but I'm willing to have a crack. And he did it and did a great job. But I got the mixes back and I was like, they just weren't quite... I'm like, they're good, but they're not like radio quality yet. Right. And we kind of hit a wall. We did a bunch of revisions and I was like, it's just not zinging. So that was a hard call that I had to make when I got back to here to Melbourne. I was like, I think I need to invest again and just get the raw tracks from Tyler, the producer, and then we'll mix them in a studio here with a guy who did all the Compliments of Gus albums. So I'm talking like big investment financially to do that, but it was the best call. Firstly, because all things were sweet with Tyler. That was the most important thing. I didn't want to, you know, bust of a friendship or, you know, we'd done all this time together, like, making these songs. Yeah, totally. But he was so chilled about it. And he was like, no, you booked me as a producer and that's the main thing. And so he's absolutely produced these tracks, but we just got them remixed. And yeah, so then went to Melbourne and I was able to go and sit up in the studio in those sessions and just learn and ask the engineer what he's doing. And fascinating, like amazing. Just pulls apart the song and just crazy what goes into a good mix. And yeah, in the end, that was actually a really good experience for me to handle some hard conversations, but also to learn a bunch of stuff in the process. And so it's all that kind of stuff that you learn. You're like, okay, hindsight now, if I was do another project, I know what I would do different and what would do the same. So yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's like, I guess something where some people would think close enough is good enough, but then that there's that one thing that you don't want to skimp on, I guess.
Yeah,
it's like when someone gets married, it's like I tell them, like, pay for a good photographer, because that's the thing that you want to look back at. And mastering is probably the same thing. It's like that's gonna be the icing on the cake that makes the difference between radio and not radio.
Yeah, brilliant example, because it's like you can have cracker songs or great production, but if it's not close together, it's like a great wedding dress, but if no one gets to see it with a good photo, then it's, you know, it's not quite there, you know. Yeah. So it was very much that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what would be your advice if anyone's out there, they've been playing music for a bit and they want to do a bit of recording and see how they can go as far as releasing something? Because mm-hmm. you've got some experience with that now.
Yeah, yeah. And from both ends of doing it myself from the bedroom studio, yeah. man, you can make some stuff sound good. Like, I'm getting better and better as I just keep learning.
Is that the best place to start? Like,
yeah,
do it yourself,
yeah.
trial and error, that kind of thing?
Yeah.
Before I think, spend some money.
Totally, yeah. And write a bunch of songs. Like, you just write so many songs, and there might be rubbish. Like, there's that many rubbish songs that I've written, or parts of songs, but you've got to do that to keep fresh, I think, and practice with production techniques and sounds and what you're enjoying, play live gigs, stuff like that. And then, yeah, then take it to a pro, whether it's a producer or engineer or I don't know, you've got to build your own team. But yeah, I think definitely do the, like, it's $500 and you could be set up at home with a, you know, if you've got a laptop, then just grab a mic and an interface and away you go. So you can't really lose out doing that.
It probably depends as well on the style of music. Like, for something like this with, you know, that pop edge to it, you probably need that extra layer of mastering. But I don't know, mm-hmm. if someone's doing something a bit more rocky or folky or bluesy, do you think that it differs based on what you're trying to do?
Yeah, I think to a point, like that more acoustic-y kind of stuff, you can pretty quickly get a good sound doing it yourself, really. And you can make demos sound great just acoustically, but as soon as you start really locking in the layers, you want a big fat sound, you've got to invest to get that.
All right, so I think we've covered a lot of good ground, and it's been cool just to see, like, your own, like, discovery of this process, because I'm sitting here thinking you've been playing music forever, you've been playing in front of people forever, you've been probably recording forever, but then even still, you've got a lot to learn from this past experience and probably heaps to learn in the future as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Never stop learning. And that's all relationship. Everything comes down to relationship. I've definitely learned in this. Like, the people that I've got around me, you know, are like long-term friendships now, and that is what keeps you in good stead. And it's not just about the dollars you throw in front of someone or whatever. It's all about the way you treat people.
Yeah.
100%. Like, yeah. So I've learned that very much as well. So,
that's great. Yeah. So last question, which I ask everybody.
Oh,
if you could do, if you could do anything and know you wouldn't fail, what would you do?
Wow.
That's a real, like, church retreat kind of question.
There. Yeah. That's like getting deep, man. If I could do anything that wouldn't fail. Man, I'll just say I'm probably, what I'm doing is like just really having a go, particularly at music stuff. I just feel like that's where my gift kind of lies, and just pursuing that comes at a massive cost. But I'm like, whether it fails or not, I'm going to do it. So, but probably the Nashville thing, I was like, I feel like I need to go there or live there or spend more time there. And Maybe that's that.
It sounds like you've got a girlfriend over there or something. I keep going back every year.
Yeah, wow. But death music.
Yeah, it must be a place that just brings everything out of you from the sounds of it.
Yeah, I think so. A lot of learning. And so I've kind of pursued that. You know, looked at getting green cards and visas, but it's like so hard at the moment. So probably if I knew it wouldn't fail, I'd probably have a crack at that. Yeah. But it's scary as well, man. It's like, that's a scary thought to pack up and to leave everything that you love here. And
it's something that until you do it, you'll probably be thinking that's what you need to do.
Yeah, quite possibly. So
you may as well give it everything you got.
All right. Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming in, Nath. It's been great to catch up and hear the kind of story behind the EP and everything that's happened leading up to it.
Awesome, man. Thanks for having me, Jono.
Thank you for listening, and thanks to Audio Technica. You can catch Nathan on Facebook at facebook.com/NathanPlumridge. Tunes are also up on Spotify and iTunes, so make sure you support the Sustainer EP if you enjoyed what Nath had to say. The best way to support this podcast is to leave an iTunes rating and review. If you really want to get into the 8-Bit network, you can head over to patreon.com/weare8bit, that's A-T-E-B-I-T, and that's where your monthly pledges can pump up the 8-Bit Collective, help us hit our stretch goals as a podcast network. As always, you can follow me on social medias at Jono himself. And until next week, keep putting in work.